second to the penultimate episode. I occasionally try to use big vocabulary words correctly. The penultimate episode of season 15 of Mention and Dispatch is here, and we are talking fall conventions because we just had a whole bunch of them, and people are coming back from them and have really cool tales to tell and stories to share. And to that end, we have a full house tonight. Our buddy Grant is back from up north of the wall. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
So pushing cardboard has slowed down slightly because you decided to power wash your basement, right? Is that
yeah,
what happened?
We were having a renovation, and the plumber had a burst pipe. So now we're having way more of a renovation than we originally planned. And we're living in another house. You guys can only listen to this, but my cohorts here can see I'm broadcasting from a basement. That's a washer and dryer behind me. I'm in a deluxe studio here.
Just you're power washing cardboard now instead, right?
That's right. Power washing cardboard. That's right.
Yeah. just don't turn them on. So that was our buddy Aaron, who some folks may actually recognize the face from Connections Online because he's usually a panel moderator for us and has shown up on an occasional podcast or other recording here or there. But also he is part of our writing crew, and you will see articles from him on a regular basis, including, as you are listening to this, his Compass Expo wrap-up from just a couple of days ago. So, Aaron, welcome to Mentioning Dispatches.
Great to be here. This is my first time on the Mentioning Dispatches. So,
yeah.
It's the first time for everything.
Yeah. And it's the first time on Mentioning Dispatches, but not the first time I've had her on a podcast, because this goes back to Grogcast days. But Christina Carl is back with us, and not just a great war game person, but one of my favorite baseball writers also, which is, you know.
Oh, you put me on the spot. Now I got to, I'm already worrying about my Hall of Fame ballot. And, I'm not going to leak it here. So I'll tell you right up front.
And not asking, but I was literally just reading Jason Stark's article about the Hall of Fame ballot right before this as I was watching it. We record this on Tuesday nights. I was watching the U.S.-Uruguay soccer game and reading Jason Stark's Hall of Fame ballot wrap up, and man, it's an ugly class of Hall of Famers this year. It's not an impressive list.
Not the most impressive bunch of new guys to add, but
yes.
I haven't seen the list yet. Maybe I don't want to.
Yeah,
I'm big on baseball, and I haven't seen the list yet, so I need to go check that out.
Aaron, it's a lot of names you'll recognize, and most of them you'll go, really? On the Hall of Fame ballot? Like, that's going to be your reaction.
Have you ever had a year where nobody was inducted?
It's been a while since, but that said, you know, I think the biggest drama, and I know I did not mean to derail the conversation, but the biggest drama is whether or not Andrew Jones is going to get in his 10th and last year, pull Larry Walker or Edgar Martinez out of the voting booth.
Larry Walker.
Now Larry's in. Larry was one of the few that got in on that last
ball play. Yeah, yeah. So I just give him a shout out because he's a Canadian boy. Come on.
Fair enough.
Him and Edgar are both high altitude baseball players, aren't they?
Edgar played in Seattle mostly.
Oh, that's right. He spent most of his time in Seattle.
Yeah, which is why like 12 people ever watched him on TV.
Andrew Jones is a great player, but as a lifelong Dodgers fan, and back then when he played, the Braves and the Dodgers were both in the NL West. It's not like it is now. So he was the arch rival.
As an Astros fan, I hated them both.
I wonder down the road when it comes Mike Trout's turn, what that's going to look like, because that the whole Mike Trout story has become a debacle for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, went
to the worst possible market and then decided not to leave when he had his chance, and how he's stuck in the market from hell. No one watches him. No one sees him. And heck, most of the time he's hurt anyway. So he went from being the next Mickey Mantle to being the next Mickey Mantle, but he jumped 10 years ahead to when Mickey Mantle got hurt. So then when Mantle blew his knee out, you know, now he'll never break all those records they were predicting he would break.
No, nope. No, he will not.
Turning our attention to fall conventions. The three folks we've got here all went to three different ones, so we're going to end up getting three different stories about this. Let's Grant, you usually would come down here for something south of the border. However, at the moment, you're not traveling this direction, and totally understand. Not going to get into that here, but that meant no SD HisCon for you, and you instead plugged into BottosCon.
Yeah, BottosCon is... It's in New Westminster, BC. New Westminster is just a suburb of Vancouver. So it's still part of a pretty big metropolitan space. It's a regional con, but I think the attendance was about 145. So like for a small con, it's like a large small con, I guess is what you'd call it. I think that's close to what SD HisCon probably gets, and more than I'm used to seeing at GMT weekend at the warehouse. And it's organized by a guy named Rod Bottos. That's where the name comes. It was called something else for its first several years, and I guess the gang around his organizing committee finally convinced him to, it was colloquially called BottosCon, and they just changed it to be official after a while.
Might as well.
Yeah, it's a much better name than the Great Western War Game Convention or something.
Yeah. So this one runs, is it the usual 2.5 days of starts middle of the day Friday and runs till Sunday night?
An extra day. It starts Thursday morning and runs till Sunday night. But like most of these cons, by Sunday afternoon, people are starting to drift away.
Yeah. For hours on Sunday afternoon, I literally had to kick Bruce Maxwell and Keith Tracton out of the building. They were still trying to line up one more game. I'm like, guys, I want to sweep it all up and leave. Like, I've got the key. I got to lock it up. Can y'all go?
Well, I went out a day early as well because Mark Bottos, the organizer at all, and I think he does this every year, he'd organized a talk from a Canadian military historian, Mark Zwelke. So we all, or those of us who came in early, went to this community hall, and he had a slideshow. This year's topic was Canadians in Holland, not the part going up to the Scheldt, but the part after that, the very end of the Holland campaign. So that was an interesting conversation, and I'm totally used to knowing a lot about the early stuff in 44 in Holland, but the later stuff and going into 45, well, I didn't know much about it, so it was great to hear it.
That's really cool. So 100-ish folks,
closer to 150.
150. Obviously, a bunch of locals there. You mentioned doing some gaming with Brian Train. The dude's like 30 miles up the road. So
actually, yeah. he's across a big body of he's across this strait. Brian's from Vancouver Island. Yeah. Vancouver City is on the mainland.
Okay.
I know it's totally confusing, but he's close enough. It is sort of local to him. It'd be it's farther than across the bay if you're down Christina's way.
So there are some folks that get on a plane to get to you guys though to get to BottosCon.
Out of town. Yeah, there was a few of us from kind of across Canada. I mean, I'm just over the other side of the Rockies from those guys. But then there was another guy from out on the prairies, another guy from Montreal, another guy from way out the East Coast, out in St. John's, Newfoundland. So that's about as far as you can get. And then there was one or two guys from Seattle or Oregon as well. So a couple of guys had come up from down south.
That's cool.
But mostly it's local folks.
Yeah, the couple of folks I've talked to that are Bottos regulars, and one of them is part of our writing crew, Byron, who helps run the raffle up there, or the prize giveaway stuff, is one of our writing crew. They've mentioned that it's mostly local, but there are enough folks coming from out of town that you need more than two hands to count them. And it ends up being a good crowd to get some gaming in. For the game events, so you've got the Canadian historian that you had the talk with, but the bulk of the weekend, this is primarily game stuff. There's not a ton of ancillary things other than, hey, let's throw a whole lot of games on the table and play, right?
It's just about exclusively games. There was the talk the night before, but there was no panels, nothing like that. There was a few demos, but that's still games as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was all games. And you mentioned Byron and the giveaways. I don't know, those guys at BottosCon, they're great hustlers, because I would think they had 30 to 45 games to give away as door prizes. Basically, your chances were 1 in 3 that you pick up a door prize if you went to BottasCon.
I'm thinking it was more than that based on the email Byron had mentioned to me the other day. I was going to go look quick and see.
It was huge.
I was sort of curious. Like there are some conventions that, you know, will work in a tour of some historic site. Like Circle DC is always good about tacking a tour or two onto there, or a baseball game or something. Like they'll put some additional non-game events on the agenda. I know SD Hist, and we'll get to hear all about it from Christina here in a second, always include a couple of designer panels, some other talks. Aaron, I think Compass, you know, has some of the designers give some talks, but I don't think there's a whole lot more than that besides just games on tables, right?
Actually, you'd be surprised when I do my write-up. Like Greg Smith, who, you know, is a designing machine, and he has a lot of these solitaire games, the aircraft ones and the ship ones and so forth.
Yep.
He came with about 20 games, and he didn't even bring the one I wanted to see, which was Insurgent Tide about Iraq. But yeah, he had a stack. I actually got a picture of him sitting next to them. He came with a stack of games. Adam Starkweather came with all of his Warrior series. He's got three of them, Warrior, Mexico, and he's got the political one, and there was one other one. And so there's a lot of design stuff. Ernie Coakley came with his Island Infernos World War II quad. So if you wanted to playtest stuff that's not out yet, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, we'll dig under the hood of that with Compass here in a little more detail in just a second. Grant, I just found the info. So it was 62 door prizes that went out.
Right. I won one. I got a lovely game from Hollenspiel that I didn't have previously. So that made me totally happy.
Yeah. Hey.
They have a great thing, too. It's like they have, you know, like you say, 62 door prizes. What they do is they give you 5 tickets and you put your name on the ticket and there's a cup for all the different prizes. And you just put your 5 tickets in the cups that you want. So, you have a rough chance of getting a door prize of something that you're actually interested in. Hence, I get a Hollenspiel game, which, of course, I had a couple of tickets in those cups.
Yeah, that's the way we run the raffle at Origins for the Wargame HQ area that we run. Everybody that plays in a game with us gets a raffle ticket. So the people that got the better chance to win are the ones that played more war games with us. So everybody that plays in one of the games with us gets their raffle ticket, and they get to pick and choose which one they're dropping them in. So you're
nice.
You're only taking a chance on winning something you actually want, is what you're after there. So, overall, we'll come back. We'll circle back around for some details of games you played and things you did. But overall, positive experience, sounds like.
Totally positive experience. It was it was interesting to see the like, just in a general way, there was a lot of games that had miniatures. There was one big table in the middle where they played a minis game every day. They played. They played Wings of Glory one day. They played some naval thing. They played a Hoth thing. Every day it was a different game.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the actual, I would say it was like about kind of half war games, half of the kind of Euro war game multiplayer with like minis and stuff like that. There was a lot of that stuff going around. Like, and you know, stuff like Arcs and Root and stuff is
war game adjacent,
kind of adjacent. Yeah, yeah. And a fair that which meant there was more women at the convention than you'd see at a place that was strictly wargaming.
Yeah, yeah. Way to stereotype folks there, Grant.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
I'm just picking on you, man. And last quick question just for the audience. This isn't one at which you've got any vendors with booths that have a ton of stuff for sale or anything. This is, again, show up, play games, take a chance on a raffle prize, drink beer, be Canadian, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the way and you can have beer in the hall. The way they organize this week, there's a restaurant in the hotel where the convention is. So they had servers come through and you could order beer or food on the Friday and the Saturday, so you could have, you know, whatever you wanted.
That's pretty cool. We had to walk across the parking lot to get to our beer for the fall assembly, but it was there. We had the bar in the main VFW building, and we had the small building out back, so we just had to walk across the parking lot to get to the beer for us.
So you got your steps in.
Yes, I did. I wasn't getting that much beer.
Woo-hoo!
Christina, SD Hist, I think they run around 160, 170 people down there, right?
This year, I think they almost got up to 200. It was like, I want to say it was possibly the biggest. Okay. They had a lot of, I mean, I remember squeaking in late, and I think my, like, you know, because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to hand off 49ers coverage for a weekend and come down, but I did. My deputy did great. It was fine. But but I did get in late, and I think my badge number was in the 190s. So,
okay.
You know, that's my, it definitely felt full. And it also, because it also went from, I mean, there's a Thursday evening mixer, but again, Friday through Monday, and there were still a pretty good, I'd say it was better attended Monday than I, from years past. Usually I feel like, Grant, I forget if we always, at the first two I went to, we always played on Mondays, but, and we're maybe with the last dozen people, among the last dozen people there. But since I just drive down, no, it was still like, you know, with an hour left, there were still like, you know, a couple of dozen people still there.
Yeah. I always, SD Hist and Circle DC are kind of, you know, cousins unofficially, but I think in both cases, they end up having to cap attendance, like, because the fire marshal won't let any more people in the building, I think is what ends up happening in both of those cases.
So. Yeah, I think you're right on there. That said, and I don't know if you'd like, if there was ever a point where all 200 were all there at the same time necessarily, but, you know, like, but they definitely was a lot more activity in the bar space this year. They were doing the panels in there for the most part, because the second gaming room, they had the main hall that, you know, everybody complains about the lighting, but that's where most things go on. But then the side room, like, you know, every table was filled, and like, you know, there was something going on all through the con that I saw. So like, except maybe Monday, but in the side room, but like in the main hall, it was pretty packed.
Yeah. The, we've had a couple of folks from SD Hist wrap it up for some conventions, you know, for some podcast coverage in the past, but it's always interesting to hear what's going on, you know, on any given year. One of the crazy things about SD Hist is it seems like there's about 50 or 60 different content creators all showing up at SD Hist. So you don't lack for photo coverage of the place, because whether it's Beyond Solitaire or Meeple Lady or anybody, like, there's always a bunch of people there taking pictures and sharing them. Plus all the designers and creatives that you might be following that are also sharing their stuff. So,
oh yeah, no, I mean, it's almost always, you can count on the Revolution guys to be making the drive down from Sacramento. Cole Worley was there, but not in any official, like, you know, to do. Yep. Liz from Beyond Solitaire was there showing off a couple of games. And then, of course, Meeple Lady, I think, already has her post on the subject already out. So, yeah, it definitely draws a lot of people. A lot of stories or reviews of the convention are already out. There are more to come. It just seems like, yeah, you get a lot of people, a lot of pictures, some video. That said, I missed the panel that Akar and Liz, I think Akar moderated it, but Liz was on it, and I was just there for the gaming, so I missed some of the good stuff.
Yeah, so unlike Botto's, SD Hist does put some panels in place where you've got some collected folks giving whatever sort of talk / audience interaction kind of discussion going on there. But I think also, those tend to be designer focused, don't they?
Yeah, they definitely were designer focused from what I can recollect. But then, of course, the other thing is that, you know, because Harold Buchanan and the whole SD Hist crew, like, they also gave out a couple of awards, like, you know, they the game for, like, I'm just looking it up, it was the game on Occupied France,
the Summit Award.
Yep.
Yeah,
the Summit Award was War Story this year.
War Story from David Thompson and David Neal. Yeah,
which was cool. And then the Bobby Munoz Award, I want to say, went to Emma.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. For her video essay on
Kurt Vonnegut's Lost Kurt Game. Vonnegut,
that's right. Yeah. Yes. And so, like, you know, just generally some really cool stuff going on in addition. And then they always have their board meeting, which is open to everybody. And so since, you know, I mean, Volko was there, a lot of the people from the Zenobia Award were there. So, like, you know, generally speaking, it's like, you know, a lot of shop talk, a lot of stuff that goes beyond gaming. But
yeah,
like I said, I was kind of boring this year. And outside of talking some baseball with Mark Herman, I was there just at game.
Yeah, and SD Hist actually has like a whole group that helps organize this, and they're a formally, officially registered organization. I don't know if they're a nonprofit or what exactly the structure is, but SD Hist exists as a formal entity in a way that some of the other conventions don't. Like ours.
It's also nice because it's stable. I mean, they have that stable, like, you know, doing it at the Portuguese Hall, right there in like old San Diego. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful trip. Tacos, seafood. There's a brewery 2 blocks away.
It never rains.
Hotels and walk. It never rains. You know, block. You know, like plenty of hotels and walking distance. So you all do get your steps in. And it just has everything going for it.
Aaron, Compass Expo, did you fly up there or did you drive it?
I drove up. It's about 7 hours, depending how you drive around New York City, because whatever you want to do is avoid New York City at all costs, which means you drive through New Jersey if you're coming from Delaware like I am. It's not a bad ride, but they're in kind of central Connecticut. It probably, from an environmental kind of overall environment, couldn't be more different than SD Hiscon, right? You're not on the coast. You're not eating seafood. You're in central Connecticut. It's very fall there, right? The leaves are changing color. It's very New England. The ride up and back was very nice, from that aspect. I grew up in New England originally, and, it was getting chilly. It was getting chilly at night. I came up in shorts and, quickly switched to pants once I got
Yeah, is it in Hampton or is it in where in Connecticut is it?
The town is Meriden, Connecticut. It's where they have it at a Comfort Inn and Convention Center. It's not a huge convention center. It's small, but they've had it every year since the very first Compass Expo, which was November of 2018. They've had it every Veterans Day weekend, other than I think 1 year during COVID, and they've added a spring running of it as well now. I think they've had two in the spring. Those are in May. They got another one coming up. They're already recruiting for it. They give you a discount if you signed up. If you signed up while you were there, you got a discount already. See, Grant, that's what you have to do. Yeah. For like next year's January thing, you got to give the discount this year.
Yeah.
But it was a very well-attended conference. Bill Thomas, the head of Compass Games, said it was the second largest since November 2023 at about 130 to 140 folks. I'm not sure they could fit many more in. I think we were running out of chairs at one point. We had tables. We didn't have chairs to sit in. So, you know, you're standing around the table. In your best command style, I guess. And it was it was pretty full. Obviously, Friday and Saturday are the big days. I was not there Sunday, but one of my gaming compadres, Marty Spetz from Florida, he posted a few pictures to Facebook, and it had thinned down quite a bit by Sunday morning. They've also started it earlier. They now start it on Wednesday afternoon for people who want to come in and get the prime tables. I didn't show up till 24 hours later, so prime tables were not on my menu for this. But we still got good tables, so Marty saved a good one. So,
So I know Compass. Obviously, Compass runs Compass Expo. It's kind of right there in the name. But it's while they've got their games for sale and they're going to sort of focus on their stuff, it's not like you're not allowed to play non-Compass stuff in the hall. Like, they've got other things there as well, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's probably, I was just thinking about this today. It's probably a 70-30 mix, 70% like Compass games.
Yeah.
And then about 30% others. I mean, at one point there were three, maybe four of Bill Simonich's 19XX World War II games playing. There were, in fact, two Holland 44s and one of the North Africa 1941 games going at once. I think somebody else was thinking about doing Normandy 44. So Bill is very good about that. He doesn't care what you come and do. He just wants people to have a good time. Now, yes, they do sell their own games there. And if you want to get Compass games, it's the best deal going. I'm not saying this as an advertisement. I'm saying this as a person who waits, you know, 6 months to go and buy the most expensive games at 50% off. Plus they have all the Christmas sales going on. So usually there's no game that you're going to pay full price for. When you go there, you're going to get at least 25 to 50% off. And some of the doorbuster sales that they have for Christmas in their little Christmas catalog can be even more than that. So they were turning over product pretty quickly in their store.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I am curious, and, you know, Aaron, start with you, but just kind of around the table. Monster games, big games that are really hard to get at home. You may not have a table big enough. You might have a cat, which negates any monster game happening at the house. You might not be able to do much more than like a full day, but like at a convention, you can set up something big and leave it there for 4 days and play it for 4 days. You know, Winterfest famously does it for 9, right? But Aaron, did you have, not you personally, but were there games up there that like stayed up because it took all week to play them?
Well, it was funny because Adam Starkweather got there a little bit later, but he had a colleague set up his Doomsday series games, the ones that are already out,
yep,
which took up like an entire corner of the main gaming room. And it was just up on plywood sheets for several days so people could go over there and fiddle with it. But the only other real monster games were Randy Heller's Bitter Woods, the Bulge game, which he runs every year at this event. And they have 3 copies that are blown up like double size.
Oh, wow.
So it's almost like four times the size of the original map. Instead of having one 22 by 36, you'd play like almost 4 of them. And the hexes are an inch, the counters are an inch, and they're beautiful sets. He's got 3 of them. And plus there's some smaller copies there because they have a tournament they run every year. And those are the big ones. Those are the ones that take up the most space. There was also one other game from an outside designer. If you give me a minute after, I'll find the name of it. It was in playtest mode, and that thing took up, it must have taken up like 30 plus square feet of space. Wow. It was a big game, and I had seen it at Historicon this past summer. It was in the room next to ours, and it uses little miniature stuff. It's kind of like Axis and Allies on steroids in one way, I guess. So there were a few big games there, but a lot of, you know, normal size ones as well.
That Bitter Woods game sounds like, you know, my first war game for preschoolers, right? You make everything oversized and chunky for little hands to manipulate.
Yeah, in this case, it's for old hands and old eyes.
Grant, did they get any monster games or things that went up and stayed up for 3 days at Bottos, or is that not really what they do there?
It's not my thing, so if it happened, I didn't notice it. I don't think I noticed any games staying up overnight. There are certainly lots of multiplayer games, especially with all the sort of war game, Euro game combinations. But the biggest ones were, like, that miniatures table was giant, and so the big Star Wars game looked huge with the walkers and the, you know, it wasn't Star Wars flyy fly. It was Star Wars walkie walkie, right? It was, so it had all that stuff. And it, like Aaron described, the one I played in that was blown up was Grant Dalgleish from Columbia had brought up the giant neoprene map for their new, their Alliance game, their multiplayer Napoleon game. And so it's this huge map, just a joy to play on. We had a 6-player game, and it was my first time going, and I was playing Spain, so I had very, very low expectations. I allied with England right off the get-go, of course. I think we were playing, we started 1808 or 1809. Anyway, things just cut my way because France went east really hard at the beginning. So I went, I'm going straight in the back door, and made him come back to me. And by the end of the third or fourth turn, I was fighting Napoleon, and he got the worst of it. I got some really great dice. I killed Napoleon. The game ends as soon as Napoleon dies, and then you count up the victory points. And as luck would have it, I actually won the game as Spain, which defies all expectations.
But you killed Napoleon, so you cut the game short for everybody else. Way to ruin someone's fun there, Grant.
Well, we had two or three good hours of fun at it. It was a really fun game. It was I'd never played that bit a block game with like six people. It's impossible. We left our blocks up. I mean, the only way to really have fog, the fog of war blocks, is if you kept your blocks face down all the time. But I was just like us. You know, I mean, we were all just like, we just left them up, and the guys across the table couldn't see what your blocks were. But like, you know, France and Spain could see each other's blocks, and still we went at each other hammer and tong.
Sounds great. Christina, I don't think there's a whole lot of big monster games at SD Hiss that like go up and stay up for 3 or 4 days, are there?
Not quite that. I mean, you know, John Carnahan was there, and he usually gets a corner table, like a huge table, and sets up his miniatures games. He demoed Come Out Fighting, and he also had, but before that, he had Captaincy for his Napoleonic seafaring game, like miniatures game. And so, you know, that's always cool to see, but definitely something which, but yeah, I think he basically was out there to demo both and each, like spent a day on each. There was, of course, the ginormous copy of John Company. I saw that get brought out. And I want to say, I forget if Liberty or Death, Harold's classic, of course. I think the monster copy of that turned up, but Harold, there was no big showdown of Harold versus celebrities this year. I think it was Harold was playing, like last year, I think it was the Player's Aid versus Harold and somebody, and they got in costume and had a lot of fun. But this year, I think it was a little more low-key and not quite so dramatic.
For the John Company game, was it just an oversized copy of the normal John Company game, or did they do the modified 20 player mega game RPG hybrid thing?
No, I think it was just like, you know, it was just like a ginormous copy. I don't think they tried to, you know, it wasn't a cast of thousands this year.
Yeah, because there were photos from Gen Con, I think it was, this past year, where they did a big, like, 20-player, multiplayer, you know, multiple people for each family throughout the game, where you had, you know, different folks within their factions themselves, and it was kind of an RPG element to it all, this big hybrid version of it, and it looked like a ton of fun. It looked like somebody turned John Company into a bit of a mega game.
Yeah, I see somebody's going to say, like, Christine, you're entirely wrong, because I didn't pay that much attention, but I definitely saw, again, you can't miss the table presence. It was out there. I think the Revolution guys also had their initial version of course, that 80s classic, the Civil War, 1861-65. They had a big mocked-up version of that, and supersized maps, supersized counters. So they had that set up in the side room, and I think that stayed up. And, of course, Eric Lee Smith was there as well to talk to folks and playing games himself and stuff. And so it looks pretty. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. It's also recognizably very much still U.S. Civil War, but and you know, I mean, Revolution does such a good job that you know it's going to be gorgeous. And one of those tough questions for me is whether or not I'm going to make space for it in my collection, in my small collection.
You know, you are. I mean.
Maybe. I mean, like, you know, I try to keep it under 100 games, so like you know, I'm trying to be responsible. Actually play most of them, many of them. So
yeah, the question around this. Yeah, the question around the monster games is always an interesting one with the game conventions, because on one hand, game conventions are, Jeff Tidball put it really well, like you give yourself permission to ignore the outside world when you're at a game convention, right? You're there to play games, and that's what you're going to do for 16 hours a day. And some folks want to go and they want to play four different games in those 16 hours. Some folks go and they want to play that game for 16 hours because it's the only time they'll get 16 hours to play the one game. And so it's always interesting to see the folks that show up at the conventions because they want the one big immersive experience versus the ones that want the buffet, right? And hit a lot of different tables all at once. So
there's a halfway point there. Like, I don't want to play multi-day games, and mostly I want to play the four games a day. That's my usual thing. But I also always try to squeeze in one of those things like Here I Stand or Virgin Queen or one of those things that's going to take 6 or 8 hours. Like, I like those as well. I don't want to come back and play the same thing. If I'm losing on Thursday, I don't want to come back and lose some more on Friday.
Winterfest, that's their shtick, is that they put like four games on the table for 8 days. Like, that's, they play, you know, they got four tables.
They play the giant OCS games, right?
Yes.
Like the entire Russian front from Leningrad to Black Sea to the Crimea.
They'll do that, or they'll do, they've got some Monster Labatt games. You think of some of the heavier games that are still like one-day games, some of the bigger, like a BCS game or something. That'll be the side game for some of those dudes at Winterfest. While your opponents are taking their turn in the OCS game, you go over to another table and you're playing a BCS game as the side game, which boggles the mind to me. So, Christina, what were you going to say there?
No, I was just going to, like, piling on Grant's point, this year, like, I think there were even more games of Here I Stand and Virgin Queen getting played this year. I want to say there were at least three different games of Virgin Queen that got played, in addition to like four or five games of Here I Stand that got played. I devoted one day. I kind of did your thing, Grant, in my game of Here I Stand, because surprising everybody, I won as the papacy in turn three. And which, you know, like, everybody was like, whoa, I mean, I got a fist bump with Nanda Gupta for that. I was just like, wow. I'm like, I don't even know how I did it, but I did it. But then, of course, because the year before it, Here I Stand, of course, that we played from 8 to 8 and it was incredible. But this time we ended up, like, you know, finished before 2 p.m. I'm like, huh, all right. Well, that I did not have plans for the rest of this day. So, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? I won. I went out and had a margarita, of course.
Yeah.
So, what else are you going to do?
We're off to tacos early. So, all right, Aaron.
By the way, that other game that I mentioned, I actually underestimated it. From the picture that's posted on the Compass Expo enthusiast page on Facebook, it looks like it's about 40 square feet. It's called Struggle for the Rhine, Operation Market Garden by Oxford Game Design, which is a company I'm not real familiar with. I guess they only have a couple other games, but this will count for about 8 games by the time they're done with it because it's so big. I mean, like, that the little army men guys look like midgets on the map. It's how big the map is. So,
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Let's dig into some of your personal gaming while you were there. Aaron, what did you get played while you were at Compass Expo?
Not as much as I would like. I guess my embarrassing game was I started out with C3I's New Korea game that came out. Me and Marty Spetz played that the first night we got there because we didn't have a lot of time. It was like, this should be a fast game. And we actually were able to play it in about 90 minutes to a conclusion. And it's one I wanted to play because I finally got to chat with Trevor Bender and I told him I'd play it at some point. And so we got that knocked out. And then the next day, somehow I ended up in a game of the Russian campaign, the Compass version, not the GMP version, against a guy who's actually from Delaware. He's from the northern part of the state. I don't meet too many gamers in Delaware. And as we were playing, he kind of let it be known that he was actually a tournament player. And he was just killing me. I mean, it was just, I thought I was doing great for about two turns, and then my entire Russian front just like vaporized, and it was over by 11 o'clock at night. And I tried playing the South China Sea game. I was trying to do compass games. And then I spent a lot of time doing some of the playtest games. So I spent some time with Greg Smith with his B-52 solitaire game that's going to be out in Paper Wars in about a year and a half. I spent some time with Island Infernos, the quad game that Ernie Copley had. And when Adam Starkweather showed up, I spent some time trying to figure out how to play that whole Doomsday series, which is, you know, Cold War gone hot. And it's funny because he has this gigantic map set up on like five sheets of plywood. And we were playing on a 11 by 8.5 piece of paper, this little like trial scenario. And I'm looking over at these other maps and we're playing like the Battle for Berlin, kind of 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. And I was like, there's something not right here, but it actually worked out really good. I don't think I could have been able to. We were both burned out at that point. We're both tired because it's, you know, Saturday night, and there's a picture of us there, like just like zoning, trying to learn the game. So he'd probably shown it to 50 people by then.
So a mixture of some compass stuff plus some playtest stuff. Got a chance to learn a game or two. Got your ass kicked in one of them. And
For sure.
And then,
wanted to play the Russian campaign for a while. I've got it and hadn't had a chance to play it yet. So
And then got to be a tourist in between and like watch other people do cool stuff.
Well, I had to do other things there for Armchair Dragoons. It's a wargaming website you might have heard of that I had to had to go do an interview with Bill Thomas for my article for that website.
I love how Aaron makes it sound like he had to. He volunteered. He said, "Hey, I'm going to Compass. Do you want me to do this?"
Well, Bill was
nice. We appreciate
it. Down and chat for like a solid hour. He says, 10 minutes, man, just yes, no questions. And like an hour later, we're still chatting. Somebody had to come get him. So
that's great.
I had that.
Yeah. Grant, what was your inventory like for Botos Con? What did you knock off while you were playing there?
I think I got close to a dozen games in, so I won't go through all of them, but normally, as I said, normally this time of year, I usually go down to SD HisCon, and it had become Christina and my, we'd finished the last couple of years, we'd play each other the last day of the con, and I wasn't going to be able to do that this year. So this year, my first game of the con was the game that I was going to get Christine to play if I went to San Diego. It was Oblique from Amma Bell Holland, the Freddy the Great game. And it's just a fantastic game. We had a great time. It's a game that has it has no mercy. If you make a mistake, you'll just get eaten by it. And it's this thing where you kind of dance around, and then once you engage, things just go boom. And I managed to win. So that was fun. But I thought of you, Christine, when I was playing it, because I knew I wanted to show you this game. I think you'll probably like it because it's you know, it's unusual, and you seem to like that period as well. So anyway, that was really fun. I saw Brian Train there, of course. I got an interview with him for my podcast. I've interviewed him a couple times, maybe even once for you at ACDC. It was either for you or for SD Hist online. Anyway, it was nice to finally meet him in the flesh.
Yeah.
And I played him in his game, Brief Border Wars 2. I played one scenario of that against him. And then I had some downtime on another day and played two other of the scenarios out of that box against somebody else that I met there. So that was great. Brian also had his latest coin game there, China's War?
China's War.
I think that's it. Yeah. And they had arranged a game, and the guy that was supposed to play Japan had to call in. He had family emergency or something, and I was just sitting, minding my own business, talking to somebody, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder to see if I could sit in, and so I got to play that with Brian and a couple other guys, and it was fantastic. It was
it really had to twist your arm into that one, huh?
Well, I mean, it was, you know, it was, there were good people, and I'm always interested to see new games, right? And it's fairly standard coin stuff, but it's it's the Japanese, and then the Chinese have three different factions. There's the communists, the nationalists, and the warlords. And I won as the Japanese, but it was no fault of my own. It was the fact that we were all new players except for Brian and the two other new players who were playing the Chinese, two of the Chinese factions, didn't realize that it's in that game, it's really incumbent on especially two out of the three Japanese factions to keep the Japanese in check. It's one of those things where it's kind of three against one until the end game.
Yeah.
So they let me get a little too wild in the beginning, and it was over at the second propaganda card.
Yeah. We had Ryan on podcast earlier this season that we really dug into. We really spent a lot of time on Brief Border Wars, but he went into a bunch of detail with us on China's War also. So we've done a deep dive on that one.
He also brought a couple of his abstract games. He hasn't found anybody that'll buy them. He hasn't found anybody to publish them, but they were great. He also got this game called Guerrilla Checkers, which is basically on a checkerboard, but it's kind of like a cross between Go and checkers. It's like one player's playing Go and the other player's playing checkers. One player's playing on the intersections of the squares, and the other person is only just playing on the red. Fantastic game. Love playing that. Yeah.
Yeah, Brian had the rules for that one in the Zones of Control book that came out, almost 15 years ago now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got another game that uses similar pieces called Gravel, and we played that as well. That guy's just got a crazy mind for mechanisms.
Yep.
Another game that I had a great time with was Crisis 1914. There was two guys looking for there's just somebody. I signed up for it ahead of time because I was interested in it. I missed it when it came out, and it was just three of us. It plays up to five, I think, but three worked great, and every turn was tense. And I don't generally like push your luck games. That's not kind of my thing, but there's something about this game where it doesn't feel so much a push your luck as like kind of dancing on a knife's edge, sort of. It's like you're always right on the edge. And so it doesn't feel like there's anywhere to push. It was really fun. If you haven't seen that game, check it out. Morris Suckley, I think, is the designer there.
Yeah, I've seen it on tables, but I've not played it myself.
I ended up playing it three times at SD HISCON in 24 because it was just so much fun. And it's kind of a racing game. It's kind of a push-your-luck game. But I think because the theme comes through as far as, like, you know, you really are – like the brinksmanship, and but yet everybody doesn't necessarily want to go to war, but you do want to, like, you know, intimidate everybody else around the table that you really, really mean it. And the hands are kind of asymmetric. So so England has a lot of things that cool things off. Germany has a lot of things that heat things up. Austria, I think, can just totally blow up the board. It's kind of fun. I couldn't recommend it more highly. It's definitely a great pickup game where if you run out of, if you just need 2 hours in between things, then yeah, go for it.
Yeah, exactly that. I think I was Germany. If it's three-handed, it's Germany, Austria, and Russia. And the way it works is the farther you go along, at some point a card gets added to your deck that makes you kick off the war, basically. And you really want to avoid that. So you want to avoid getting that card into your deck. Once it's in your deck, you really don't want to draw any cards if you can avoid it. So it's got that feeling. But Austria ended up kicking off the war, and then it came down between Russia and I to see who won, and Russia won, but not without a really exciting finish to see if I could overtake him in the last few cards.
Was there a favorite experience amongst the games that you played at Bottos?
Well, definitely Crisis 1914 was my new find because that was the one I hadn't played before, and I played, well, there was a couple other things I hadn't played before, but that was my favorite thing to sort of discover. And then playing Oblique was just like, I just really enjoyed playing that game. It's It's one of those ones where it can be over quickly and you can just play it again, too. There's 10 scenarios in the box, and or you can, you know, turn around, change sides, because sometimes it will end it quickly because things will go south. Amabel is such an interesting designer. Most games that have a morale track will have, like, you have this morale that's steadily decreasing until you're out of morale, and that's the end of the game, right? In this game, in Oblique, she's got what's called a despair track. You start at the bottom, and your despair gets greater and greater until somebody's loses all despair and it's over.
Yeah. Hey, for some of us, that's called the work week, right?
Yeah, maybe that's how she was inspired.
By the time you... She designs games for a living.
Yeah. I think the other one I should mention is I played a Compass game, Brothers at War, 1862. There's four big scenarios in that box, but each of the scenarios has sub-scenarios. So we played one of the scenarios from the Mills Spring map, and that was a really fun game as well. That's a cool system. Blind Swords is my favorite, but that Brothers at Arms series, they got another box coming out this year, I think 1861, and I'll pick that up as well, because I think this is a contender.
One of these years, we don't have time left on tonight's podcast, but one of these times, I'm going to get you on here and try and figure out why a Canadian guy is so enamored with the U.S. Civil War. So,
hey, it's no different than you being enamored with the English Civil War or the Austrian War of Succession or something like that.
I guess.
Well, I bought both copies of Brian Train's Brief Border Wars and joke with him that he needs to do, if he's going to do these quads, he needs to do a fifth wheel game like SPI used to do. Mm-hmm. And do that for like paper wars, and he should do one on the U.S.-Canadian border war.
My copy of Brief Border Wars 2, I got the email earlier today. It's finally in at the local game store, because I try to make it a point to order some stuff from Gamers Armory, you know, at least once a quarter or so. And I've had Brief Border Wars on pre-order with them for 2.5-3 years now. And it's funny, because frequent buyers, you can build up some store credit as a frequent buyer there with a certain percentage of points, whatever. And I've been saving them for when Brief Border Wars 2 came in. So I think I'm going to end up getting this thing at like 60% off, just because it's taken so damn long to arrive that everything else I've bought has been accumulating towards that.
I think you'll like it. It's cool. You know, the first one was all post-1950, I think, conflicts, right? Stuff from the 60s and 70s. This is all stuff from the before the First World War, or going just up, or I mean, up before the Second World War. So it's a whole, there's only one in there that has any air power in it at all. So you don't have all that going on, but cool conflicts. And, you know, it's so totally Brian, like, there's two of them. There's one you'll go, oh yeah, I know that. Oh, I didn't think about that, but I guess I knew that. And then there's two that, I mean, if you're me, you went, I had no idea that was going on. It's just like, where did you pull that up?
I've never heard of before, but they were brief, so I probably just overlooked them in the newspaper.
Yeah, some of these things are like, you know, like 3-day events, right?
To me, they're
the first one I knew, the 2006 Summer War, and then the whole Cyprus thing, and after that it's been kind of downhill.
To me, they're great convention games because they play quick, common rule set, no real shared components except for the deck of cards. So what I end up doing is I'll end up asking Compass to send me an extra deck of cards. That way
I can have
two simultaneous games when I'm at conventions. But now that Brief Border Wars 2 is here, that may be the game that I put on the schedule at Buckeye Game Fest for March and just do a couple of runs of Brief Border Wars 2 there. I'm just happy that my copy finally arrived. So I'm going to run down there this weekend and go pick that up.
It teaches super fast too. So that's great. Easy for filler games.
Yeah. Christina, what was the inventory of what you got to the table out there in San Diego?
I only got six games played. I try to usually leave a little bit of wiggle, because you never know what you're going to fall into. And that's how I ended up having so much fun with Crisis 1914 last year. But this year, let's see, we did I drive up the morning of, and so, like, you know, we planned for a teaching game or a learning game of Congress of Vienna, the new one out from GMT, that, you know, looks really cool and is a cousin of Churchill, of course, but two of our players dropped out. So it was just Tom Vickery and I. So like, you know, so I took on France and Tom played three handed, like, you know, like trying to be all three, but that just basically ruins the fun of the diplomacy phase. So we really just kind of like puzzled it out, figured out how to play the game and spent three and a half hours on that. And we had fun, but, you know, like we grokked it. Combat system's a little bloodless if you're playing the basics. So I want to learn more about like what you can do with those maneuver chits or other things you might be able to do to make it feel a little more Napoleonic. Otherwise, it's just stack of cubes with a die roll modifier versus stack of cubes. And, oh, I lost three. That just doesn't feel like, you know, like Leipzig is the way it's just like, it didn't get you, but maybe it needs more battle cards in the deck. I don't know. Maybe we just didn't have them drawn and have them around to play with, but yeah, it just felt a little very abstract on that front. And without the diplomacy phase to, like, you know, make you feel the fun of the haggling as Metternich or Napoleon or whatever, definitely, you know, like, I like it, want to play it with all full four, but, you know, like definitely was good for that. The next day was Here I Stand, which ended early. And then I had what I think was my single most frustrating gaming experience at any convention. David Peng volunteered to try to teach me how to play Triomphe Marengo. And I gave it a shot, and that one is definitely a brain burner as far as it feels very like you really have to understand the rules. And so doing it as a pickup, disaster, not good. Did not understand. And of course, even worse, being encumbered with actual like military history education or background, like thinking about it. And it's like, I'm like, I'm thinking that as the Austrians, I'm going to do this. No. Play the game as it's designed. Play the game. Don't think about, like, you know, like I'm Marshall Alinsky or whatever, and I'm going to do this, this, and this. No. You really have to. It's very much like, I guess I liken it to Go or something like that, where you really need to understand the sequence of your moves. You cannot make a mistake. Combat is very, very strange. And ultimately, I just ended up getting very frustrated. And it's like, okay, beautiful. And I think one friend that said, like, you know, it and the other game, Napoleon's Triumph, right? They said, you know, if you focus on these games, you might become great at playing these games. You may not play any other games, but you will be great at these games, and you will appreciate the depth and the nuances and all of that. And I'm like, I just like, you know, went headfirst into it and then bounced right off. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably not a game I'm going to pick up. It's really, really intense, and I just don't know if it's for me. The next day was Weimar, Matthias Kramer's big game on trying to save the Weimar Republic and with the Nazis, not as a player. And that was incredible. If I have a game for the con, it was that. I owned it. I haven't been able to play it, but this is what a con's for, right? You find three other people who are like, okay, let's spend 6 hours, give it a shot and see how it comes to. It was incredible. And so Andy Heim from here in the Bay Area was one of the players.
He's great.
He's great. It was fun. I mean, we were partnered as government for most of it. Tom Vickery, again, he was playing the communists. He was very sharp, and he ultimately won as the commies. And then McMillan played the DNVP. And it was just, you know, like, I think I made a mistake playing a Zentrum of trying too hard to keep down the nationalists. And it's like, yeah, but actually, if I'd done it right, I would actually also pull them along a little bit, because even though it was government, I want to smash the communists more than I want to smash the nationalists, right? And so I got a little too hung up on smashing the nationalists and calling for the police, and it was great, and we definitely stomped the nationalists. But the commies, like Ernst Taelman, wound up being president of the Weimar Republic, which I'm like, I just can't help but laugh out loud. It's like, never would have happened. It's like, okay, wow, all right, President Ernst Taelman, go figure. that's why we play, right? So it was amusing and a lot of fun, and definitely a game we want to play further up here in the gaming group up here. But then that ended, you know, like, and I got in, I had already talked to Alex Knight about learning how to play Land and Freedom, the mm-hmm. Spanish Civil War game. So, but before that happened, the designer of Patria Libre, Mexican designer, Saul Sanchez, I want to say, he was there. And so he gave me a teaching game of that. Beautiful. I don't know if I fully understand the rules as far as like seems area control. I'm not sure how the cards really come into it. You want them. You want to build a tableau, but what you do with them. So mostly I was focused on the area control bits. Ultimately, I didn't get the Mexican Revolution or revolution started or the Mexican. Yeah, I did not do well as the rebels is really what it boils down to. And Spain kept Mexico. So don't put me in charge of that. But then playing, then the three of us, both designers and I played Land and Freedom, and it was Saul's first game as well. And that was just, now I mean, had seen it from afar. Now I'm really excited because a new edition of that is coming out with Fourth Circle. And it's just, it's extremely cool. And so like the co-opetition element of it, there was definitely some screwage. Like, you know, I was playing the moderates, and they, as the anarchists and commies, definitely were piling on and keeping Western aid from coming. And so, like, there was a point where I'm like, all right, fine, screw you. Here's the Huascar, like, offensive. And, like, you guys are going to take a hit for that because I'm just going to, like, you know, try to play my hand and get my points. So, like, you know, yeah, I didn't contribute too much in the fight against the fascists, but you guys are screwing me. Well, screw you. So it was a lot of fun. And we did save the Republic, and the anarchists end up winning overall, but just a great game and definitely something where, like, when it comes out from Circle, automatic buy. And then the last thing I did was spend a day on Blind Swords on Monday. Jonathan and I played the original, the OG game itself, Stonewall Sword, and it was like, you know, and most of the time, I like, this was my first in-person opposed play, and it was a blast. I mean, like, you know, usually I'm like, because it's such a great, you know, you can play that system solo so easily, that's usually what I'm doing, is just pushing around the counters and putting on the chits and seeing how it plays out and dreaming big Bruce Catton thoughts in my head. But but this was just so much fun. And, you know, like, we played the quote unquote short scenario, and that took us, you know, five and a half hours, but and three to get through three turns. It was a short one, but it was worth it because it was so much fun as far as like, oh my God, Nathaniel Banks is actually going to win this one. Go figure, like first and only win of his career. But so I felt pretty good about that. But and it was just fun. I mean, like, you know, again, like things that you did not expect to happen, brigades doing things you don't want them to do, individual batteries making heroic stands and like blowing away entire brigades, like, you know, like even as their supports run away. And it's just, it was the mayhem and everything that you would read in history about the American Civil War. You got to see, get a taste of it and a flavor of it just in this. So can't recommend that system highly enough. So I did play one classic Hex Encounter war game, and it was awesome.
Blind Swords, the later volumes, like I think they're up to volume 11 or 12 now, there are games that have shorter scenarios. That was the OG, as Christina said. So they hadn't looked at all the different nooks and crannies and ways they could do things. But I have fond memories of that game as well. That sounds great.
Yeah. So next year we're going to throw everybody in a blender. We're going to send Christina to BatosCon. We're going to send Aaron out to San Diego, and Grant gets to go to Compass Expo, right? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to shuffle the deck and let everybody go to a different one. And
well, next year I may go, if FoxCon can get their stuff together, I may try to go out for the second one to see if they make improvements on the first one, which was, you know, last year's, you know, big surprise announcement that Decision Games was going to do their own event. It's just unfortunate whatever momentum they had kind of got waylaid by this, but I'm sure they can get it back on track next year.
Yeah.
My problem is all of these are on Veterans Day weekend / week, and so it's... For me, every day is Saturday. I'm retired, right? So semi-retired, mostly retired. Every day is Saturday. But, you know, it'd be nice if somebody else would have that attitude and be like, maybe we put one weekend and one the next weekend, you know? kind of like straddle Veterans Day when it's in the middle of the week.
Hey, we do ours in October. We stay clear away from Veterans Day.
Yes, so. You do, and I give you kudos for that.
For those that don't know, the Foxconn is essentially the one run by Decision Games, because Decision is kind of a three-part entity of Desert Fox Games, which is the retail outlet that sells stuff from more than just Decision. There's Decision Games, the actual publisher, and then there's the Strategy and Tactics Press, which handles the magazines, and everybody tends to lump them all as one big thing, but Doc is very particular about no, these are three different things. You shall treat them as three different things. So Foxconn was Decision's thing, and because nobody wants to go to Bakersfield, they end up holding it in Dallas. But I think part of that was
Doc, what he said was he wanted to capture the middle part of the country, because we already got SD Hiscon on the West Coast, you got Compass Games on the East. And, now we've got, Botticon up in Canada, so we've got to do something
in the middle.
So.
Yeah. Who's go?
I'll jump in here, Grant. I don't know about you. Having enjoyed SD HisCon as much as I have, and I do plan to go next year as well, but now I'm like, okay, yeah, how do I deal with the calendar? Well, the good news is that I'm probably going to then go to the spring GMT convention, the warehouse fun. And so Bakersfield sounds civilized and awesome compared to Hanford, California, but I'm sure they'll have a lovely state.
That used to be my yearly thing was Hanford in the spring and San Diego in the fall. And Hanford is the closest big place to it, I suppose, is Fresno. But it's, if you go to the old town, you can find some good food. If you go to the new town, you find nothing but mall food. But there's you can find some good Mexican food in the old part of town.
Yeah, about the only downgrade you have from Hanford is King City. Like, there's not much further down the stepping stones you can go than Hanford. So,
well, I grew up in the Central Valley, so believe me, I know what I'm signing. Lodi, Modesto, all of the metropolises of the Central Valley. I am familiar, but
I-99 corridor there.
Yeah, no, believe me, I-5, know it only too well.
I have a question for you. Did Harold Buchanan mention anything about SD HisCon East again this year? They canceled it this past August. I went to the very first one. I missed the second one. I was going to go back this year to Newport at the Naval War College. Did he bring that up at all while you were there?
I didn't go to the, it did not come up. I think what they mentioned was that they were thinking of doing another virtual con, online con, in the spring.
That's June.
And then, but I did not hear any talk of a return to Rhode Island. So
I'm hoping. I love lobster.
Nothing wrong with the sea. Yet, as much as you like, I used to live in Central Connecticut when I was sentenced. ESPN sentenced me to 3 years in Bristol, and I survived. But they did always reliably have oysters, and that's good. So I'm not going to trash Central Connecticut too much. I took up range shooting and bird watching and all those healthy, good old fashioned hobbies, because there's nothing else to do in Central Connecticut. So,
Aaron, we're not going to dance too far into any political anythings, but I think given how much the current politics have locked down extracurriculars for a lot of the military, getting something like a game convention on the base at Newport's probably going to be tough for another couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's what killed it this past year. I was hoping maybe at this point they would have gotten over that, but probably not. It's at the museum. I mean, how you can't get much less controversial than that, right?
Hey, not to be controversial, but see the way they're treating a lot of military museums. It's totally in their wheelhouse to shut that stuff down.
It bites, but. I think the reality is, I think, we're a couple of years away from seeing SD Hist East come out again. And that is zero insider information. That is just me parsing the things Harold has said publicly.
I'm living in a land of wishful thinking.
Woo-hoo! looking forward for the next, you know, couple of conventions, as people are looking for what they want to hit for their next convention, we do have the convention page on our website that you can go look up all kinds of conventions. And I've actually got a big reload. I'm getting ready to add where I've been stacking up the 2026 events now that enough of them have their dates announced. Those will start getting added to our calendar. We've got two different things on that page. One, we've got the actual Google Calendar that you can subscribe to that has a whole lot of the conventions on there where we gather and put them on there. But we also subscribe to a bunch of other people's event calendars. There's somebody that does a really good one for ASL events that we have subscribed on ours. We include a bunch of the different live events. So some of the different live shows that that some of the different Wargame folks have put out. Their schedule in a Google Calendar format. There's a variety of game stores and game clubs around the country that lean into some war game stuff that have their calendars published. So all those things are collected on that site, or on that page on our site. But then down below, we have an extract that's just the conventions. And that's the main thing that I need to get reloaded. First of all, I got to shave off like the top 10 rows because those have already happened in October and most of November. But as you're looking, also every Tuesday and Tuesday Newsday, like we give you the next 6 to 8 conventions that are coming up. And at this point, there's not a ton more going to happen between now and the end of the year because the holidays. So we're starting to include some of the January ones in those listings. If you're looking for places where you're going to find the Dragoons, Buckeye Game Fest happens very early this year. Normally happens late March, early April. This year, it's the second week of March. Normally it's a lot later in the calendar. They had an issue with availability of the facility. So it's going to be the second week of March. And remember, for Wargamers, Buckeye Game Fest is a cool one because the War Room actually opens on Monday, even though the rest of the convention doesn't open until Thursday afternoon. So if getting a big something on the table like a Labatt game or a big OCS game or something like that has been on your bucket list, Buckeye Game Fest is one you might want to look into. It does take place in the Columbus Convention Center. It's the same place Origins does, but it's not in the main convention halls. It's in the conference rooms and the hotel. But that's one that we show up at and support. We did Quad Fest last year. We'll find some cool shtick we can do this year. But you'll see a bunch of the Dragoons there Thursday, Friday, Saturday of BG.
So what you're saying is there's not 30,000 people there.
Well, Origins has never hit 30. We'll be happy when they get back to 20. But yeah, BGF runs about 400 total. Now, of that 400, there's probably 80 to 100 Wargamers in that crowd. But what's cool about it is there's Wargamers can bring non-Wargamers with them, and the non-Wargamers are going to have plenty to do over the main gaming hall. But it also gives Wargamers, you know, more casual Wargamers a chance to duck out of the hex encounter stuff and go, you know, drop cubes on maps here and there, you know, lay some tiles, whatever you want to go do in the other room. We're not going to judge, not much, maybe a little, but it is a miniature Origins, miniature Gen Con, that they do a really good job of putting on a great show. But the War Room is a big attraction there because it does open early. You can get a bigger game in if that's something you're interested in. After that, you'll see a couple of Dragoons show up at Circle DC. Like, we don't have an official presence there the way we do at BG. And then the Wargame HQ at Origins is where you'll find us. With that, on our way out of here, as we start to wrap this up, Christina, do you have your next convention planned, or is it sort of dependent on the sports calendar a little bit?
It does depend a bit on the sports calendar, although I think I tipped my hand already. I'm thinking I'm going to the GMT
Weekend of the Warehouse.
The Weekend of the Warehouse in April. I just think that's well after opening day, so the Giants will already have, you know, lost 10 straight or something. Or Buster will have turned it all around by then, and they'll have won 10 straight. We'll see. But it'll be exciting with Tony Vitello. But I think late April is going to be good. And then, you know, that's nice spacing, 6 months-ish apart with that, between that and SD HistCon, and maybe find a few other games that I want to try out. Maybe somebody will finally play Clash of Monarchs with me. I don't know. We'll see. But speaking of games that will take forever and like definitely long and only for the brave. But the other one, of course, I know, Grant, you and I have kicked around like, you know, when are we ever going to play it? But I think we both picked up copies of 1811 Albuera, and which is gorgeous. Little shot.
It's a heavy box.
It's a big, heavy box. But yeah, Tactical Workshop, I want to say.
Tactical Workshop. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah,
small publisher, but that's another one of those big, like, you know, tactical hex encounter games that I do want to try out and just see how well it does. And see if the Vistula Legion Lancers can shatter an entire division as they did in history, but we'll see.
Grant, what's next on your radar for convention? Have you figured it out yet, given the travel constraints?
Well, I'd love to get back. I'd love to meet up with Christina at GMT West in the spring. That would be great. We'll have, I don't know. We'll have to see what the border feels like. Probably before then, what I'm likely to do, if I can kind of wangle the time, is there's this online thing you might have heard of called ACDC. If I can swing something there, I'll do that.
Yeah. Well, I we appreciate that, definitely, since, like, we run it and all. But I was thinking of, like, in-person stuff. I wasn't just going to shill for the ACDC here. So
yeah, that's my job.
I appreciate you doing so. Thank you. Right on cue. Your check's in the mail. It's got to cross the border, so it'll take a while to get there. But, you know.
Christine, the other one that I thought of that struck me, since you love Blind Sword so much, there's that Weird Brothers, I think. Solferino. Brothers.
Yeah, Solferino. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it combines like Blind Swords with maybe something you'd be interested in terms of the history. You probably know all that history, like, way more than me.
100%. Yeah, I still haven't punched my copy, but that one is sitting there waiting for the play, and yeah, it definitely looks fun. So
I hear it's good.
The Legion got into it as well. Like, I do like, you know, I don't think Herman Lettman is going full, is it Richard Borg, like, you know, as far as spreading around his babies to all of the different publishers, but it definitely feels like Blind Swords.
Oh, he's getting close.
Yeah. Blind Swords is everywhere. It's kind of lovely.
Aaron, what's the next one on your, have you figured out?
I don't know. I was contemplating Winter Offensive, MMP's Winter Offensive, which is only a couple hours from me in the direction of Washington, D.C., so I can probably kill two birds with one stone. The problem with that is it is all squad leader, and I am not an advanced squad leader guy. I'm not a regular squad leader guy. I am just not a squad leader guy. So
apparently
that
trying
might be
to
my chance this year. I last went 2 years ago to get an idea what the thing was like. There are people that are playing BCS there, which is something I want to jump into, and also Standard Combat Series. So got to go do that. And I got the chance to meet Kurt Schilling while I was there, being an old Red Sox fan, longtime Red Sox fan. That was a great thing on my list to do, finally meet him. I may go back and do that. I may do Compass Expo in the spring because it's not as big. There's not as many folks.
Okay.
And I get a chance to maybe do some more playtesting stuff there. And then in the summer is Historicon, and we will probably be doing SPI Fest 2. And I may be helping Russ Gifford with that this year. Very good chance of that, since he lives in Omaha and I only live, you know, like 4 or 5 hours away. And he lives 45 hours away, or however long it takes him to drive from Omaha. And we're going to try to do that again while there are still people playing old SBI games.
That guy's a saint for doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Claims he drives straight through. I don't know how you can do that. That's a long insane freaking haul. You've got to stop and sleep somewhere.
Yeah, I've driven across the country about 5 times. There's no way. Aaron, for what it's worth on Winter Offensive, I understand that the GCACW folks are trying to make a bigger push and a bigger presence at Winter Offensive. So
yeah,
not that that might be
the room that they do their thing in.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that helps or hurts, but it's not squad leader. So
yeah. Like I said, last time I went with my friend who is recovering from knee surgery right now, and if he can go, it'll be helpful. We played some SCS stuff, and with DCS becoming bigger now, that's something I want to jump into to learn that. So this might be an opportunity to do that. And yeah. They have good sales also at their little sale table when you go into MMP. They're doing it in the same place. It's in Bowie, Maryland, right off of Route 50, going towards Washington, D.C., at another Comfort Inn. Apparently, Comfort Inns are the place to go if you're having these things. They're doing it there for at least one more year. They've been trying to find a bigger space, though.
Yeah. Guys, we are well past the hour that we were originally aiming for, but, you know, we were having fun chatting games. So I didn't want to cut anything off prematurely, but I also don't want us to wear out the well. Look, two of y'all still got like 3 more hours to stay up, and that's fine. But like Aaron and I are on the East Coast, and we're getting close to bedtime here. So I want to thank the panel. So, Aaron, appreciate you being here. Grant, thank you. Christina, great to see you again. Let's maybe not make it 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is, between podcast appearances next time. But
I moved 3 times since the last time I was on. So
yeah, wow, good lord,
that's a lot. Holy moly!
Chicago, see, Aaron and I are used to that being army dudes. Like the fact that I haven't moved at all in that amount of time is the really remarkable part of this.
Christina, is all your furniture on wheels?
I wish. No, you kidding? No, the worst part is when I left Chicago, when we left Connecticut, and moved to California, like first to Long Beach, I made the mistake of donating all of my winter clothes, right? Because I'm like, when am I ever going to need any of the things that I needed to survive Chicago or a nor'easter or any of that stuff? No. Sure enough, first year here, the 49ers had to play in Green Bay in January. I'm like, boss, can I expense a winter outfit? Because I will not survive -20. And sure enough, it was like -10, -15. It was awful. But it was everything you expect of Green Bay in January.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that's a lesson to all of the audience. Don't get rid of your winter clothes. but we've got one episode left for Mentioned Dispatches. By the time you're hearing this, we will have already recorded it. So the fact that we're doing sort of a, you know, audience participation, AMA kind of thing, like send us your crazy questions. We're going to try to answer them. You lost your shot because by the time you're hearing this, we've already recorded it. We already collected them all, but that's what's coming up next week. So you can enjoy that for our wrap up for the for our fall season. We will take our usual winter hiatus and then come back in the spring after the ACDC is when we will start recording our spring season in the run up to the summer convention season and travel season when we'll take our usual summer break. In between, we've got the ACDC, we've got Connections Online. Aaron is usually a panel moderator for that. I think he's still trying to decide whether or not he's crazy enough to do it.
Connections Online I can do.
All right.
I may not be able to do ACDC. I maybe attend ACDC.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Participate in Connections Online.
We still got to lean on Grant to, like, you know, be a talk show host for the ACDC as well.
I just have to land a victim.
Yeah. Oh, we've got a few pretty snazzy historians lined up already to come talk. We just got to do some matchmaking with the talk show hosts to get the right historians to the right talk show hosts. But it's something a little different we're trying this year for the ACDC. You know, yes, it's a virtual convention, but we still try to make it feel as much like a real convention as possible. That includes some of the different seminars and talks and panels and presentations and whatever. So to that end, this year, one of the folks who's helping us organize it happened to be able to recruit a couple of historians, not necessarily game folks, but real historians, to come in and talk about the Plains Indian Wars. There's a East Front Guderian's Panzer talk, and then there's another one that's around colonial America. Some early colonial warfare, you know, muskets and tomahawks and such. So we've got a couple of fairly nifty topics that we're going to try and cover as a part of all of this, in addition to the usual hilarity that ensues whenever Brant gets anywhere near a camera. So we'll have some fun with that. Guys, this has been awesome.
Also encourage people to eat fast food if you want to get the real convention experience.
Yeah, the one thing that's
nothing but fast food.
Yeah, the one thing that's different with the ACDC, though, is we don't care if you actually take a shower or not, right? You only got to sit with yourself at your computer for that one. So it's a virtual convention. I don't care. Do what you want.
The ambiance.
Yeah. All right. So cool. Audience, we appreciate you putting up with us for, you know, an hour and change at this point. But thank y'all for being here. We will catch you next time on another episode of Mentioning Dispatching.